Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
This is going to be a good one.
So last time we unpacked the introduction and contents of Unraveling the Fabric of Fear. Got a sense of the map, you could say.
That's right. We saw the what. Today we're getting into chapter zero, the preface, which starts to explain the how.
Understanding energy.
Like the kind physicists
study. Hey, exactly. Mm-hmm. How that can help us understand human behavior. So the whole book, it's about human psychology and behavior, but through this lens of energy. The introduction really set us up to think about fear as something that is learned.
Absolutely, not innate.
And this preface, well, it kind of takes that idea and goes like full-blown theoretical physicist on us. Has anyone ever stopped to think about their emotions as like actual energy, you know, like a real force?
Which leads to this pretty big idea in the preface, that you can understand basically everything, atoms, people, whole societies, by looking at energy flow.
That's the proposition.
Yeah.
Follow the energy. It suggests that all actions, all behaviors are driven by these energy transformations.
Because it's not just that energy persists, but that every little action has this ripple effect, energetically speaking.
Exactly. An energetic consequence that keeps going, influencing other things. It's a potent idea when you think about actions driven by fear versus those driven by, say, love or curiosity.
And that implies interconnectedness.
Deep interconnectedness. If energy shifts in one place, it has to affect something else. It doesn't just stop.
So nothing exists in isolation?
Fundamentally, no. Mm. According to this perspective, everything is linked through these energy flows.
The preface grounds itself in some pretty solid science, right? The law of conservation of energy.
From physics class, right?
Exactly. Energy can't be created or destroyed, only changed from one form to another. So when we talk about emotional energy, it's not just some woo-woo idea.
Right, it's got to go somewhere.
Exactly. It becomes our actions, our impact on the world.
You know, it makes me think of those times you walk into a room and you could just, like, feel the tension. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Thick, heavy.
Oh, absolutely. You can practically cut it with a knife.
Is that emotional energy we're picking up on?
It brings in Einstein's EMC2, that equation that basically proves even solid objects, like everything around us, it's just energy, just super condensed. So when we talk about fear being an energetic thing, they're not messing around. It's like literally woven into reality.
Whoa. Okay, I need a minute to like process that.
Yeah. It's not just about feelings, but actual energy in motion.
But okay, hold on. If we're talking about measuring emotions, how does that even work? We don't have like mood thermometers, do we?
Uh-huh. The preface points out how science uses these things called spectrums to measure energy.
Okay, like a ruler, but for energy.
So you've got hot and cold for temperature, light and dark, obviously, for light. Even sound has loud and quiet, or sound waves, peaks and troughs, they can cancel each other out, and boom, silence.
So kind of like with electricity, right? Positive and negative charges, they balance out, and it's neutral.
Exactly. And that brings us to the heart of the book's argument. Emotional energy, it exists on a spectrum, too.
Interesting.
And guess what sits at the opposite ends?
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say love and fear.
You got it.
They feel like such opposite forces within us.
One draws us in, the other pushes us away. But here's where it gets really interesting. You can't experience both love and fear for the same specific aspect of something simultaneously.
Hold on, I need to wrap my head around that. Does this mean we can't have mixed feelings about things?
That's a great question. And the preface explains that what we're really feeling in those situations is a bunch of different feelings towards different things about that person. Like maybe we're drawn to their sense of humor, for example, but a little wary of their temper. So we're not actually feeling both love and fear toward the same thing at the same time.
Ah, okay. So it's more nuanced than just two opposite emotions happening at once. It's like we're responding to all these different aspects of person or a situation. And that creates that, you know, the mixed feelings, that push and pull.
Your overall opinion is like an average of all those emotional responses.
That's actually really helpful. I'm thinking about someone right now, and I can totally see how different aspects of their personality trigger different reactions in me. Interesting.
So the preface argues that emotional energy also has a zero point.
Okay.
Not at one extreme, but right in the middle.
Wait, so what does that even mean?
What's the zero point on an emotional energy spectrum? It's apathy and ignorance.
Whoa.
It's a fascinating idea, right?
Yeah.
The preface calls them the neutral zero point, where you neither love nor fear something because you either don't care about it or are completely unaware of it. It's like the emotional energy is turned off.
But, and this is important, the preface notes that neutral doesn't mean harmless.
Right. Apathy and ignorance can definitely lead to negative stuff in society.
So it's not just about feeling strongly one way or the other. There's this whole range of emotional intensity. Hmm. This is already making me think differently about how I experience the world.
And that's just the beginning. The introduction actually touches on this briefly, hinting at how this emotional energy spectrum plays out in everything from our personal relationships to global conflicts. It's all connected.
Wow, that's a lot to process. And we haven't even gotten to chapter one yet. I'm sensing a theme of interconnectedness emerging here. Is that something we'll see more of as we delve deeper into the book?
Absolutely. This idea of everything being connected from our inner world to the outer world is woven throughout unraveling the fabric of fear. And in the next chapter, Living in the Now, the book dives into our early development and how our caregivers shape our relationship with fear and curiosity.
Reminds me of how babies are naturally curious and fearless. They haven't yet learned to be afraid of the unknown.
Exactly. And the book encourages us to tap into that innate curiosity to approach life with a beginner's mind. But we'll get into that more in the next chapter. For now, I think it's important to let these ideas from the preface sink in.
Okay, I'm really curious. How does the preface connect this love-fear spectrum to the way we act?
Well, that's where things get really interesting. Mm-hmm. It suggests that when we act out of fear, we create more fear.
Oh, okay.
So it perpetuates a cycle of negativity. While fear can be powerful, it's usually based on not understanding something. Ignorance, whether it's intentional or not, can be a huge roadblock when it comes to overcoming fear.
Makes sense, yeah. Fear the unknown, all that.
We see it all the time. Throughout history, how not knowing can lead to conflict and all these problems.
What's the antidote? Where does love come in?
The preface suggests a pretty radical idea.
Oh.
Love, when understood properly, can actually conquer all.
Okay, now I really need to hear more. This is getting good.
Yeah, well, it doesn't just throw out this idea without any context.
Okay, good.
It connects it to the emotional energy spectrum, remember?
Oh, right, right.
And the preface actually gives us this really helpful table that shows all the different ways we describe the love-fear spectrum.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of force, attention, concern, even just mannerisms. It's like a cheat sheet for understanding human behavior. The preface points out how our language often reflects this whole love versus fear spectrum.
Hmm. So what we say actually reveals something about our energy.
In a way, yeah. Think about words like attract, pull, curious, compassionate, creative. Those have a certain energy to them, right?
Yeah, very positive, open.
Then you've got words like repel, push, fearful, frustrated, destructive. Very different vibe.
Definitely more negative, closed off.
The preface talks about how the English language can sometimes like obscure this idea of emotional polarity. Now, sticking with that table, it lists creative as an expression of love.
Yes.
And destructive as an expression of fear. That felt a bit different.
It is potentially quite novel, yeah. The preface argues that destructive is the direct opposite of creative.
Which isn't usually how we think about it, right? I'd normally say uncreative is the opposite of creative.
Me too. And the preface points out that thesauruses, even AI, will often list uncreative as the antonym for creative and create as the opposite of destroy. It shows a sort of ambiguity in the language.
So the preface is saying uncreative isn't the opposite.
It's arguing that uncreative fits in that neutral middle ground, like apathy or ignorance. It's the absence of active creation or destruction.
It seems like we often get stuck thinking in binaries, something or nothing,
right,
rather than embracing the full spectrum of possibilities, including those dynamic opposing forces.
That's a great observation. And the author suggests this particular three-point structure might not be widely discussed elsewhere.
And if we don't have the words to accurately understand these forces, it makes it harder to actually work with them in our lives.
Makes you think about the power of language, how it shapes our whole perception of the world.
And how we might be limiting ourselves without even realizing it.
It's a lot to take in, huh?
It is. That's what makes this preface so thought-provoking.
It's like it's asking us to question our assumptions.
Not just about love and fear, but about how we use language to understand these really fundamental concepts.
So the more we understand ourselves, each other, the world around us, less room for fear to take over.
Now you're getting it. The preface leaves us with this sense of hope. It's like, sure, fear exists, but it doesn't have to be the boss.
I like that.
Yeah.
So knowledge is power in this case.
And now we see how the preface is really laying the scientific and philosophical tracks for those bigger ideas.
Exactly. It's providing the why, the underlying framework based on these energy principles.
And then to sort of bolster this framework, the preface brings in religion.
Yes, perspectives from various religious traditions, but it's really careful about how it does this.
Right. It's crucial to understand these aren't presented as like religious endorsements.
Not at all. They're used as historical examples, pre-scientific ways people tried to grapple with similar themes. Energy, opposites, positive versus negative states.
Examples of humanity trying to figure this stuff out for ages.
Precisely. Before the formal scientific method. Should we quickly touch on a few?
Yeah, let's do that. Christianity.
The preface mentions key ideas like perfect love casts out fear, that direct opposition.
It's pretty straightforward about how those two forces can't really coexist.
Mm.
Maps directly onto that love-fear spectrum.
Yeah. And of course, love your neighbor, foundational stuff.
Islam.
It points to hadith about empathy, loving for others what you love for yourself. Quranic verses suggesting fear can stop good deeds and the high value placed on seeking knowledge.
Knowledge versus ignorance again.
Right. And descriptions of the virtuous responding to ignorance, not with anger, but with peace.
Buddhism.
References yin and yang. And the Metta-Sutta, a whole teaching on loving kindness, specifically as an antidote to fear.
Hinduism, the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, it highlights descriptions of the mode of ignorance, inertia, carelessness, delusion, inactivity. It sounds a lot like that neutral, potentially problematic state of apathy ignorance from the preface's model.
Makes sense. The preface brings up this text called The Law of One. It's a New Age thing, but it talks about how important polarity is in consciousness.
The Law of One, huh? Never heard of it. What's the connection to love and fear?
Well, it basically says that, like, a battery needs a positive and a negative pole to make electricity.
Okay.
Consciousness is kind of the same. It needs that push and pull to create action, to experience things. Without it, there's no charge, no movement, no growth.
So love and fear, they're like the two poles of our consciousness.
Yeah.
Giving us that energy to make choices, take action.
That's one way to look at it, yeah. And there were a few others mentioned briefly.
Just quick mentions of other spiritual perspectives. Bashar, Gabriel Bernstein, touching on similar themes. Polarity being necessary for experience, ignorance being limiting, while curiosity empowers and the power of love.
So if you take all these diverse perspectives from all these different traditions, what's the link?
The link is that across time and culture, people recognize these fundamental dualities, light, dark, love, fear, whatever you call them.
Right.
There's also this consistent emphasis on understanding, on knowledge, versus ignorance or delusion, and the power of positive states over negative ones.
So the preface is basically saying, look, humanity has sensed these patterns for millennia.
And now let's try to explore them using a modern scientific and philosophical lens. It's offering a potentially new framework to understand these old observations about being human.
And here's the really cool part. It says this isn't just about us growing as individuals.
Way bigger than that.
Way bigger. It's about, like, contributing to a collective shift in consciousness.
Whoa, okay, what does that even mean?
Imagine if more and more people started operating from love, from understanding, instead of all that fear and judgment.
Man, the world would be so different.
Right. It's like a ripple effect. If we can change our own energy, maybe, just maybe, we can inspire others to do the same.
Okay, that's a really hopeful thought. I like that.
And that's kind of the beauty of all this, right? Exploring these big ideas. It's not about finding all the answers right away.
It's about, like, opening our minds a bit.
Yeah. Expanding our awareness, understanding what it means to be human a little bit better. It's a journey.
It is. And it's a journey that we can take together. I'm really grateful that you're sharing your insights and helping me to understand these concepts more deeply.
I'm enjoying this conversation too. It's helping me to connect the dots and see the bigger picture. And I think that's one of the things that makes unraveling the fabric of fear so compelling. It's not just about understanding fear, it's about understanding ourselves and our place in the world.
Is there, like, one thing you really want our listener to walk away thinking about?
You know, there's this thought the preface sparked for me. It doesn't actually say it outright, but...
Ooh, I like where this is going.
Remember how we were talking about apathy and ignorance being the zero points on that love-fear spectrum?
Yeah, neutral, no energy.
What if, and this is a big what if simply learning something, becoming aware of something, it actually shifts us off of neutral.
Onto the spectrum. Like, yeah. Knowledge itself has energy.
Exactly. Is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I don't know. But it's something to think about, right?
It is. It's a lot to chew on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, everyone. We'll be back next time to explore even more of unraveling the fabric of fear. Stay curious. Until next time.